We're joined now by Dr. Bill McCown, William McCown. He's at the University of Louisiana, Monroe, and he is a Dr. McCown. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
This is a topic that I'm sure many of us deal with, but we probably didn't know that there's an annual conference, a procrastination conference, which began in 1997. So what do people do at a procrastination conference?
Well, believe it or not, it's an international conference. It's I don't want to say it's by invitation only, but it brings all the international experts. The field of procrastination research has really been very much of interest to psychologists since the 1980s, and there really are over 2,000 articles in the area. And it's recognized as a universal problem. It exists in every culture. And in about 20% of people, regardless of the politics of the country or the religion, that 20% of people who are hardcore procrastinators seems to show up in every study. And this conference just reaffirmed that. We brought researchers from all over the world and with new data sets, and they showed that regardless of how you collect the data, about 20% of people report having serious and long-term problems with procrastination. The rest of us are more situational and do it only occasionally.
20% have a real problem, one out of five. So
one out of five, right.
How do you know if you're just an idle procrastinator, or if you're addicted to procrastinating?
Well, that's a good question, because everybody procrastinates, and when you do research in procrastination, you hear all the bad jokes. Everyone says, "Well, you should study me." But there are some people that habitually do have problems getting things done, and those sorts of people really recognize that they do have difficulties. And I'll just give you an example. I had my name just mentioned in an article briefly by the New York Times, and I've had 22 people who don't know me contact me from internationally and just say, "Hey, help me." And that's kind of sad. And the reason it's sad is because these are people that have tried to go to other therapists, other areas to find help, and no one's been able to help them. And so these are folks that can't seem to get things done regardless of what they try. And those are chronic procrastinators. And traditionally, psychotherapy, counseling, has not done a whole lot for them. And we're just starting to understand their behavior.
22 people have contacted you based on the fact that you were quoted in a story in the New York Times science section. I find that amazing, Dr. McCown.
It's amazing, and it's also sad. It shows how desperate some people can be. Just an example from my former clinical practice, one person that I knew was a professional, but he estimates that procrastination probably cost him over $500,000 in his life just from lost contracts that he had, but he just didn't get around to filing the paperwork, paying things off in a timely fashion, doing things that he knew he should have done, but for whatever reason, he just felt he couldn't do them at the time. Over $500,000, and that's not untypical. In cases where we have severe procrastinators, we find that even when, let's say, they're owed money by the government, by the IRS, they can't get around to filing their taxes. And they often lose out on lots of business opportunities or employment opportunities because they just don't get around to doing what they should do.
One of the thoughts that emanated from the recent conference at DePaul University was to accept that changing will require learning to manage thoughts and emotions more than figuring out how to manage time.
Right. And for years, we've thought that procrastination could be managed or could be dealt with by time management workshops or teaching people optimal strategies for dealing with time. And there's a whole lot of cottage industries that are based on that. And, you know, I've been trying that since the 1980s, and it works really well for the short term. And it might work in one setting. It might work at your job, in one specific job. But when you go to another job, the time management strategies that you had at one place probably won't carry over to another. some of the things, and there's some great books out there, but they're generally not going to carry over from your work life to your home life unless you really address some more of the feeling and some more of the sort of cognitive aspect that's kind of getting in the way of you getting things done.
There's that old axiom that if you want something done, give it to a busy person. Do you find that having too much on somebody's plate has nothing to do with procrastination, that this is something that really is independent of that?
Well, that's actually an extremely good question. That was my master's thesis many, many years ago.
Really?
Whether people who were procrastinators, had more on their plates, and it turned out not to be the case. And in fact, non-procrastinators tended to be the people that had more activities, more college activities, more outside responsibilities, maybe taking care of grandparents and outside employment. They were just better at managing their time. And what they really were better at were anticipating problems in the future and planning for them. And that's one of the things that procrastinators often are not able to do. And so that when a situation comes up, they tend to be a little bit more disrupted by it emotionally. And that's one of the things in counseling, if they require it, serious procrastinators can benefit from, because they can learn to anticipate problems and proactively solve them. And that's one of the areas where we have found some ability to change them.
Now, the New York Times account said that most attendees at the conference said they were convinced that chronic procrastination is curable.
You know, I wouldn't say it was curable, but we did present what we call a meta-analysis. And a meta-analysis is when you combine the results of various studies. And at the first procrastination conference, I gave the summary talk where I said that we don't have enough data to say that it's treatable. And here we are 20 years later. We do have enough data to say that it is, in some people, it is treatable and curable. In some people, it's a treatable disorder, which means that you're going to constantly have to look at it as a bad habit that you always will have the tendency to relapse to if given the opportunity. But that doesn't mean that you can't learn to work around it and learn to overcome it. In terms of the extreme situations of being curable, you don't really want to talk about that, but I want to talk about maybe you can learn to change behaviors so you don't get in those situations again. And yes, that does happen a whole lot of the time. And we do have data that show that people can change.
Do you find, Dr. McCown, that people who have this issue, that sometimes when they're under stress from other facets of their life, maybe their job's not going well, or a relationship is not going as well as one would hope it would, that those affect this?
Absolutely. You are very much an intuitive psychologist. stress kicks in procrastination, and stress can make procrastination much, much, much worse, because stress can pretty much make any psychological problem worse, or any physical problem for that matter. Stress causes us to put things off, and it causes us to do what we feel we can do best already. So if we have a new challenge that we have to do, or something that we're not certain we can do well, we tend to put it off when we're under stress. We tend to overdo the things that we already know we can do, the familiar, the safe, things like that. That's why when we're under stress, what we do is we often overeat, or we go watch comfort movies. We like to do the things that mm-hmm. we've done in the past, hang out with old friends. Similarly, when we're under stress, when we break up with someone, when we're physically ill, we don't do things that need to be completed. We return to our old behaviors. And, during exam period, we put college kids under a lot of stress. And that's one reason, mm-hmm. stress alone is one reason why they just don't finish their assignments and why they don't study.
Speaking of stress, colleges in Louisiana have been stressed by budget issues, and you have stayed the course. I think you've been at ULM now for 23 years.
Yes.
It is interesting that many professors who have opportunities elsewhere, like you, come this way from other parts of the country and end up staying. What's the catalyst for that?
I think the catalyst is why we're here is we believe in our students, and we see the fact that higher education changes lives, and that's just such a remarkable feeling to work in the classroom or to help a student stay in school, and to know that you're doing something, helping them make a journey that that 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now is going to continue to have a payoff. You know, I look at my students now and I say, you know, in 30 years, I'm probably not going to be on this earth, but my contribution to them will be. And that's just quite remarkable. And to me, that's what makes getting up every day worthwhile. And that's why I don't procrastinate being here.
Well, Dr. Bill McCown, hopefully we'll talk again soon. You're an interesting man, research psychologist, and associate dean at the University of Louisiana Monroe. It's been a pleasure.
All righty, and don't put it off. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you, Dr. Bill McCown.